Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the PAION AG conference call on the financial results of the first quarter 2015, hosted by Dr. Wolfgang Söhngen and Mr. Abdelghany Omari. My name is Steffi, and I will be your coordinator for today's conference. For the duration of the call, you will be on listen only. However, at the end of the call, you will have the opportunity to ask questions. If at any time you need assistance, please press star zero on your telephone keypad, and you will be connected to an operator. I am now handing you over to Ralf Penner to begin today's conference.
Thank you very much for your kind introduction. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us for PAION's earnings call on the financial results of the first quarter of 2015. My name is Ralf Penner. I am PAION's Director of Investor Relations, and I'll be moderating today's call. I'm joined by Wolfgang Söhngen, PAION CEO, as well as Abdelghany Omari, our CFO. Please excuse the potential lower audio quality as Dr. Söhngen is joining the conference call via his cell phone in Japan. Within the next half hour, we are going to highlight some of the Q1 achievements, give details on the financial results, highlight the most important events, and provide a pipeline and strategy update and a financial outlook. After this initial presentation, we'll be happy to take your questions. I would like to point out that the slides for the presentation can be accessed by webcast in parallel to this conference call. The webcast details have been posted to the investor section of our website and were also given in today's press release. If you have not already opened the webcast link, you may want to do so now. This conference call is being recorded, and the replay will be available later today. The dial-in details to access the replay will be posted on our website too. Before we get started, I would like to remind you that today's call may include forward-looking statements and that the actual results may vary from PAION's current anticipations. I would also like to refer to the disclaimer included in the presentation slides. After these initial remarks, I believe that we should start right on now with the presentation. Wolfgang, please go ahead.
Well, good morning, everybody, or good evening in Japan. I would like to start with our vision. It is our aspiration that we will be accepted as a pioneer in sedation and anesthesia, both in the U.S. and Europe and beyond. This will include own commercial activities and, of course, also successful partnerships. A brief corporate overview. We're a specialty pharma company with a focus on anesthesia products. Our lead compound, remimazolam, is in phase III development with significant market potential in two indications. We have already six regional partnerships with remimazolam with national champions. We're listed on the Frankfurt Stock Exchange since 2005, and our market cap fluctuates around 140 million. We have a pretty good liquidity in our stock for some time now. Our headcount is around 30 since we are a very virtually organized company, and we have 53 million cash and cash equivalents at hand, which is sufficient to complete the phase II programs both in the U.S. and EU, and I will go into details later in the call. Our stock performance recently has been quite good, and this is probably due to the excitement of the start of the program in the U.S., and we look forward to continue on that positive news flow. Pipeline overview. As I've already said, PAION's value is mainly driven by remimazolam in the three indications. We have significant peak potential in all of these three indications of around $500 million. GGF2 has been partnered to Acorda. We are happy if they're successful, but it's not moving the needle for PAION what happens to GGF2. M6G, we recently partnered with Yichang Yunwei for China and have no own development activities. I would now like to hand over to Abdel to give you a heads-up on the financials.
Thank you, Wolfgang. Good afternoon, everyone. Ladies and gentlemen, now I would like to guide you through the financial key figures for the first quarter 2015 compared with the previous year, and also give an outlook for the full year of 2015. Let me start with the P&L. In the first quarter 2015, as in the first quarter of the previous year, no significant revenues were generated. Research and development expenses amounted to 5.8 million euros, which is an increase of 4.2 million euros compared to Q1 2014. The increase is due to intensified development activities with remimazolam, in particular preparation and initiation of phase 3 programs in the US and Europe. General administrative and selling expenses amounted to 1.3 million euros and increased by 0.5 million euros compared to Q1 2014. General administrative expenses increased by 0.2 million euros and selling expenses increased by 0.3 million euros. The main reason for this development is the increase of staff and the conduct of pre-marketing and market access activities. In connection with the increased research and development expenses, we are showing tax income of 1.3 million euros, which is completely related to tax credit claims. In total, we show a net loss of 4.7 million euros compared to a net loss of 2.2 million euros in Q1 2014. The change is in line with our forecast and is obviously based on extended research and development activities for remimazolam. This means earnings per share basic and diluted of minus 0.09 euros. Now I would like to move to the selected balance sheet items on the next slide. The current assets mainly comprise the development project remimazolam with 3.6 million euros. The current assets decreased by 4.4 million euros to 58.6 million euros compared to the end of 2014. This reduction is mainly caused by two effects. On the one hand, cash decreased by 5.7 million euros, and on the other hand, tax credit claim increased by 1.3 million euros. The equity decreased by 4.1 million euros compared to the end of 2014 and amounted to 58.5 million euros. This mainly results from the net loss of the period. As of the end of Q1, the equity ratio was 93.8%. On the next slide, I would like to give some information regarding cash flow and employees. Total cash flow was minus 5.7 million euros, mainly resulting from the net loss and the increase of the tax credit claim, which I have just mentioned. At the end of Q1 2015, total headcount was 26, excluding management board. Finally, I would like to give an outlook for the full year of 2015. Basically, the outlook that we gave in the presentation of the results of the financial year 2014 remains unchanged. That means we will further concentrate on the start and conduct of phase 3 programs, as well as the production development, in particular finalization of study medication and validation of production at market scale. We will also continue our pre-marketing and market access activities for remimazolam. Both for the U.S. and Europe, we are evaluating partnering possibilities as well as independent commercialization options. For all other regions, we aim at finding license and distribution partners. For Japan, the necessary know-how transfer from Ono is ongoing, and we are currently evaluating an alternative strategy for filing. In addition, a strategic decision about the future production of remimazolam for Japan needs to be taken, as Ono is not available anymore as a producer. This process will be completed in the second half of 2015 at the earliest. Finally, we expect our partners to continue the development activities with remimazolam, and we also expect Acorda to continue development with GGF2. On the next slide, you can see that we do not expect any significant revenues in 2015, since our main focus is on development. Also, our outlook for the costs remains unchanged. Due to the phase 3 programs, R&D expenses will increase and amount to about 25 to 30 million euros. In light of the increased R&D expenses, we also expect higher tax credits for these costs. Tax income will amount to approximately 5 to 6 million euros. SG&A costs will also increase and amount to about 4.5 to 5 million euros. In total, we expect a significantly increased net loss compared to 2014 in the amount of 25 to 29 million euros. Regarding our liquidity, with cash of 53.2 million euros at the end of March, we are sufficiently funded to conduct the phase three programs in the U.S. and Europe, including filing process, and to continue pre-marketing and market access activities. Thanks so far, and I'll hand back to you, Wolfgang.
Well, thank you very much. Now let's talk about remimazolam, because this is the key focus of all our activities and our value driver. So remimazolam is a game-changer opportunity because it represents the first ever ultra-short-acting anesthetic of the benzodiazepine class. This is due to specific chemistry and its metabolization with tissue esterases. We have very good market exclusivity, and we have a comprehensive preclinical and clinical package at hand, which allowed us to initiate the two phase two, three programs in the U.S. in conscious sedation and EU general anesthesia. And as I said before, we see a very attractive peak sales potential in all of these indications. On the next slide, we use the dolphins just to explain the level and depth of sedation. So number one, procedural sedation is a very shallow sedation. You could compare it to a dive with a snorkel, so you maintain your own breathing capacity. Number two is general anesthesia, which brings it down very deep, down to the bottom of the sea. And for that depth of, you need an oxygen tank or an anesthesiologist. And the same is true for number three, ICU sedation, where the sedation level is between one and three, but it goes on for a much longer period of time. And here you also need oxygen supply. Now, when I'm asked about the elevator pitch for remimazolam, it's very easy. We can claim that it is the best of both worlds, which are represented. These two worlds are represented by propofol and midazolam. Both of them have different downsides. But in propofol, it's more a safety issue, specifically in the conscious sedation situation, and the point that there is no reversal agent. For midazolam, it is the slow onset and offset, which leads to prolongation of wake-up times and reduction in procedures that can be performed. In addition, there's a resedation risk despite the availability of a reversal agent, and remimazolam, in essence, has rapid onset and offset and the safety of a benzodiazepine in the same molecule. On the next slide is an overview of the total program that we have performed so far. As I said before, 900 volunteers, patients on drug. On the right panel, you can follow the sequence of discussions with the FDA and EMA. Unfortunately, these discussions take more time than you always hope, but finally we got this concluded and we'll be able to also start the phase three program in Europe towards the end of the first half or beginning of the second half of this year. If you look at the total number of patients that we are expecting to see by middle of next year, completed patients, is more than 2,000, which is quite an impressive safety database. And this safety database has also been discussed with the agencies, and we have the feedback that this is sufficient for filing. The next slide, Pioneers Go West, is the picture that we have used for our annual report, because this year we're very much focusing on U.S. activities, as this is the most advanced program, the fastest growing program, and we see several opportunities to make use of this very attractive program. Slide 20 is an overview why colonoscopy is such an important domain. Number one, it is the only diagnostic proven to prevent cancer. Secondly, it is a growing activity in the U.S. because of the success of reducing cancer. We see a growing market because the baby boomers are entering the age where screening is mandatory, more or less, so that we have a lot of new entrants into this space. The market opportunity in the U.S. is consisting of some 33 million procedures in total, and 20 million of them are performed outside of the hospitals, and this is where we see the most attractive segment for PION, because you can cover this area with a very precise and targeted sales force, which is not larger than 100 in total. On slide 22, you see that there are regional differences in the way colonoscopies are performed. In the Northeast, the dark area represents the propofol dominant area, and in the West, California, you see there is more use of midazolam. These numbers are from 2009 and have shifted significantly towards propofol, and you will see some data later on this in the presentation. On the next slide, you see that if you look at this market in the U.S., it's actually consisting of two separate segments. The one is the midazolam part. The other one is the propofol part. I've already explained the regional differences. The main difference in costing is that for midazolam, there's no anesthesiologist required, whereas for propofol, this is the case. And for midazolam, it is a long wake-up time. That means slow throughput, long supervision time for the patient. On the other hand, propofol patients wake up quickly, and therefore it's attractive for GI docs if they want to do more patients. So these two markets, as is clear, have two different problems, and ranibizumab can address both of these problems and will provide an attractive solution. On slide 24 is a brief description of some recent changes in the way the reimbursement is going to happen. The Center of Medicare had announced that they are going to change the reimbursement for providing anesthesia with propofol in these patients, and this, of course, has some implications that should make the business case for ranibizumab much more attractive. This is explained on the next slide. The current claim procedure is as follows. Both the GI doc and the anesthesiologist submit different claims. The GI doc receives 250 on average, and the anesthesiology receives in average 400. And with the new proposed procedure, there will be only one claim, so two specialists have to share the revenues of a claim which is potentially lower than the current one. That means for PION that if the aim is to maintain the current case volume, to maintain the speed of procedure, and maintain overall patient throughput, ranibizumab will be the only alternative that's available if less propofol will be used as a result of this decision. On the next slide, on 27, you see some hypothetical figures of sales prices that lead to different peak sales assumptions, the modeling in white is representing a business case based on current pricing, and the bluer one with the higher prices show the potential if the bundling leads to attractive to prices that make the use of ranibizumab even attractive at higher prices. Now, as I said before, there has been a shift towards propofol, which has been documented in this slide of a recent market research that we did in New York in December. You see that 80% of the GI docs are using propofol. Remember, in the RAND study, it was 48%. But the more interesting question for us was that if there would be an alternative available that would be as fast as propofol but wouldn't require an anesthesiologist, 75% of the physicians said they would be willing to change to such a drug, and ranibizumab is such a drug. We are often asked, okay, so we understand the case against propofol, but how does this play out against midazolam? And here again, we have built a hypothetical pricing assumptions varying from $25 to $100. And if there are, on average, let's say 8 procedures, you see what the cost for the drug would be. And in order to make it interesting for the GI doc, at a price of $25, we only need one extra procedure and he makes money. At the price of $50, we need only two more procedures per day in order to make it attractive for the GI doc. And we believe that two extra procedures is something that is achievable in comparison to midazolam overall. So now, what is the program that we have agreed with the FDA to come to filing? First of all, there are two pivotal trials, one in colonoscopy, one in bronchoscopy. There's one additional safety study as phase 3 study. This is a colonoscopy in ASA 3-4 patients. These patients require more intensive supervision because they're critically sick sometimes, and a series of phase 1 studies, which are routine work. The pediatric plan has been agreed with the FDA, and we will initiate these studies after filing. The goal is to achieve the same label or comparable label to midazolam, as this does not require an anesthesiologist to provide contrasedation. We anticipate filing in 2016. On slide 32 is an overview of the colonoscopy trial, which started in the first quarter, 460 patients, midazolam and placebo-controlled. I think we have communicated on this recently. So the U.S. business case, non-hospital conscious sedation, is from our perspective and confirmed by others a very attractive business case with a highly attractive net present value. And based on this, we have the ability to explore not only the normal partnering route, but also are exploring a going-alone strategy. There's, in this business, of course, more upside because of the other conscious sedation settings than colonoscopy. There will be additional indications available, like general anesthesia, ICU sedation, and the pediatric application, which we see as a very attractive part of the whole business case. So taking all this together, we see a very solid base for going alone in strategy in all indications, but also it could be a combination because if someone is willing to take up the hospital business, that could be a very interesting way to optimize the penetration. In the EU, we are focusing on general anesthesia as the lead indication. And what you see here is a launch plan that we have put up. And this launch plan is driven by how quickly you can get a pricing in these countries at the current stage. Slide 35 summarizes why general anesthesia is an attractive case, why there is medical need. We are focusing very much these days on exploring the effect and side effects of hypotension. Hypotension is a strong predictor of, long-lasting negative effects after anesthesia. And we have shown that with ranibizumab, we can reduce hypotension, and therefore we see a lot of added value by changing from the existing agents to ranibizumab. On slide 36, you see a summary of an animal experiment that shows that the difference in the dose that you need to get to sedation and the dose that starts to induce hypotension is significantly different in the ranibizumab case, but there's only a slight difference in propofol. So that means that the risk to develop hypotension with propofol at an effective sedation dose is much higher than for ranibizumab. And if you look on the right side, it somehow explains how this difference is potentiated in the presence of opioids. And in all general anesthesia, you need either fentanyl or remifentanyl to also address the pain aspect of general anesthesia. And these data from animals have been very impressively also proven in our clinical studies. So both the phase 2 in cardiac surgery and the phase 3 study that was performed by Ono have shown that ranibizumab is as effective as propofol, but has a much better cardiovascular stability and requires less catecholamines to keep the blood pressure at a certain level. So that means that we have essentially shown that the drug is working, and now we're focusing on profiling it with the focus on showing that we have less hypotension and that this will lead to additional benefits for the patients and the payers. On the next slide, essentially, this is summarized in a different way. There's lots of literature showing that catecholamine use has a strong correlation with longer stay on the ICU, which is the most expensive part in the hospital. It's known that it increases long-term disability in patients. It's a higher risk for infarction, stroke, etc. Now, what is the patient population that we are targeting? If you imagine all the patients that are treated in the hospital or that have surgical interventions, only a certain part of them require general anesthesia. And also, only a certain part of these patients go on to the ICU. And for the moment, we even neglect the hospital-performed procedural sedation. If we look at these numbers, we see that there are some 70 million surgical procedures performed in Europe, that general anesthesia is about 28 million, and that the patient population that we are targeting at launch consists of some 14 million. This doesn't sound like a big number, but for a specialty pharma product, it's indeed quite a substantial number. The program in Europe is only one phase 3 trial. It's, again, in cardiac surgery patients. It will be propofol controlled. We have discussed the protocol intensively with the EMA and expect to start this trial towards the end of the first half of this year or beginning of the second half. Based on the current timing, we assume filing for early 2017. Now let's talk about the situation in Japan. It is known that Ono returned the license towards the end of last year. The know-how transfer is ongoing. It must be understood that this is quite a complex exercise. Ono has worked on this compound since 2007, so almost 8 years, and created a lot of data. And these data must be transferred to PAION in an orderly fashion and in a way that we can identify what we need for our filing processes, because the Ono data will be part of any filing, both in the U.S. and Europe. That actually is also the value of these data. So we are currently also discussing with interested parties in Japan. That's part of the reason why I'm making this call from Tokyo. We are also exploring a way to file as soon as we have assessed and completed the existing parts of the dossier that we have from Ono. We have already engaged a Japanese CRO who is currently assessing the gap to filing and will support us in our upcoming discussions with the Japanese health authorities. Slide 44 shows an overview about the deals that we have done since 2012, covering quite a good area already, having identified very good national champions who understand the indication, who understand the beauty of ranibizumab, because most of them are dealing or have midazolam, for example, in their own portfolio or propofol. We have received already 13 million plus development cost deal that we got out of Ono. And in the footnote, we have made, given you some hint of how the value, how we estimate the value of the dossier that we have now received from Ono. So what's coming up? We expect as a next step the start of the phase three program in Europe. We think that by the end of this year we will have completed the know-how transfer from Ono and understand what the way to filing will be in Japan. Towards the end of the year, beginning of next year, we expect headline data for the phase three programs. We want to file remdesivir in the U.S. in the course of 2016, and then this will be followed by filing of remdesivir in Europe. So in summary, we believe that PAION is a very attractive investment case. We have fully funded late-stage assets in two indications. Remdesivir is a real interesting novel agent in a space that hasn't seen any innovation over the last 20 to 30 years. We have shown now that we can offer important clinical benefits, which will lead to health economic advantages. The safety and efficacy package is already very impressive, and we have some commercial validation already by the regional pharma partners. So we are well positioned to achieve all of our goals in late clinical development. And of course, now we are already looking at how can we participate in the commercial success of this compound. And finally, due to our increased share price and market cap, we see a renewed global investor interest, and we expect that this will enable us to finance whatever we need in the future to make this a successful commercial launch. Well, thank you very much. This is my take for today, and I'm handing back to Wout.
Thank you very much, Wolfgang and Abdel, for your presentation. I think we are ready to start the Q&A.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you change your mind and wish to withdraw your question, please press star 1 again. You will be advised when to ask your question. And the first question comes from the line of Igor Kim from Otto Seidler. Please go ahead.
Yes, hello everyone. I have a couple of questions. The first one, could you just briefly highlight how the phase 3 trial in U.S. is going? Have you already started with the recruitment, and is it possible to say how many patients are already enrolled in the trial? And the second question is, what is actually the breakdown between remdesivir, midazolam, and placebo groups in terms of the number of patients? And the third question is, you said you expect further development by partners in smaller regions where you already have partnerships. Could you perhaps give more details in terms of when your partners plan to launch their remdesivir, and do you expect any milestone payments triggered by these launches? Thank you.
Just a second. I think we have a little problem with the connection. Just a second, please.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, Wolfgang, I think we can hear you well now.
I still don't hear anything.
No, just a second, I think.
Okay.
No.
Wolfgang, it works now. Go ahead. It works. Yes?
It works. You hear me now?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So the you wanted to know how many people patients we have included in the trial. We're not going to comment on that, and we ask you to understand that because we do not want every day to give an update on how many patients we have. We also do not want that the sites are being called up because they need to work, and they shouldn't talk to investors. They should focus on the clinical work. So the phase three, we have published how the separation is between ranibizumab and placebo and midazolam. So it's the major part is ranibizumab. It's a small portion of placebo patients and a sizable midazolam patients, which is enough to give us an indicate so that we have enough data to compare the safety profile of midazolam and ranibizumab, which is the major task. These studies are 460 patients, each both the colonoscopy trial and the bronchoscopy trial. I had a little bit of problems with the question on partnering. I only heard that you were talking about more regional partnership, but I didn't hear the rest of it. Can you please repeat it?
Yeah, sure. You said that you expect a further development by partners, and
yes.
A bit more details. Is it known that any of your partners will launch ranibizumab anytime soon, or in 2016, or whether these launches will trigger any milestone payments?
Okay. So now I understand your question. I mean, in principle, all of our partners will, to a certain degree, rely on filings in the EU and the US. And most of them will have to do some local study in order to show that the dose regimen and the dose that is selected is also applicable in their local environment. So it's not to be expected that any of our partners launches before we do or files before we do, because there will all of these, normally these emerging markets file based on a filing in Europe or in the US. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I didn't find the slide even. It was on slide 31, you can look up how ranibizumab and placebo and midazolam are attributed in both the colonoscopy trial and the bronchoscopy trial.
Okay, no problem. I will find it. Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
The next question comes from the line of Simon Scholz from First Berlin. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. I was just wondering if you could comment on how closely R&D expenses are linked to state of patient recruitment, because we've had 5.8 million of R&D costs in Q1, and as you said, I mean, the colonoscopy trial only started at the end of Q1. The Bronco trial is starting in Q2, and the EU trial isn't starting until the end of H1, beginning H2. So, I mean, most of the testing has still got to get going.
Yes.
Okay, up there, you can take it, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say that, of course, a big chunk of the R&D spend is related to recruitment, but it's not all of the cost. So I would expect that going forward, R&D spend will further increase. If you just look at how much we spend on a per quarter basis, as the bronchoscopy study starts recruiting patients, and also later in the year when the European trial starts. So I would expect the R&D spend to go up. But you have to keep in mind that we also have other R&D spend, which is not related to patient recruitment, like we're doing production development, which I have mentioned, and this is obviously not related to patient recruitment. But overall, I think we feel comfortable with our guidance that total R&D spend should come out between 25 and 30 million euros for the full year.
Okay.
Well, and I would like to add that normally, and you know that these trials are being performed by contract research organizations, you do not pay on a, let's say, weekly basis to patients. What you do is you make an upfront payment of a certain amount, then you make an interim payment when certain deliverables have been provided by the CRO, then you make a payment when, for example, when all patients have been recruited, and then you try to keep as much as possible for the last part so that you are certain that you have received all the data. So it's not so there's no direct link to the of the spend to really the recruitment of patients.
Okay, thanks very much.
We currently have no further questions, so just a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star one on your keypad now. The next question comes from the line of Thomas Schießle from Equitz. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for taking my question. Thomas Schießle, Frankfurt speaking. Dr. Zünken, question on the ONO dossier. When will the ONO dossier be passed to you? And is this dossier a one-piece dossier, or will it be a dossier in several several pieces subsequently, so that you might be able to start earlier than the final part of the dossier to start some negotiations and some talks about the further procedure and the further plans for remimazolam in Asia and in Japan. And this is the one question. The other is on the production activities and the production of remimazolam. When will you be able to have commercially volumes? And how much money will this take to get to this stage? Thank you.
Let me start with the second question. We have already announced that we have produced registration batches because that is a requirement to file, so we have done that. So the next step is validation in commercial scale, which is one step higher. We do not give an exact guidance on how much we spend on the production or the commercial production, because that's really also highly competitive information. We do not want anyone to be able to conclude our cost of goods. Secondly, the owner dossier, well, we receive everything from owner that they have done. Essentially, we have most of that information already in electronic form. The difficult part is to get the hard, the paper. Yeah, so that will be a lot of boxes that have to be categorized and numbered, and so that you can identify certain information that is also there in electronic form, but also needs to be provided in hard copies if there's an inspection. So that is the more difficult part. And ONO has not completed a dossier, so they have started to put together a dossier, and we are currently in the process to assess how much work it is to complete that. So that's the current task that we have, and this is why we have contracted with a Japanese contract research organization that has a lot of experience in bringing foreign products to the Japanese markets, because one big advantage that we will have over Ono potentially is that we will include the data that we have generated in Europe and the U.S. in this register. We will have a much bigger and broader safety base as compared to what Ono had planned. Ashisa, was that sufficient for you?
Hello, this is the operator speaking. Okay. I'm afraid Mr. Schiess's line just got disconnected, so I'm afraid he could not hear your full response.
Oh, okay, good. So, too bad.
And also, there are no further questions.
So then, I would like to thank everybody for joining us for PAION's earnings call on the financial results of the first quarter 2015. I hope that we have been able to answer your questions, but of course, please feel free to give me a call afterwards. If you would like to listen to this call again, please visit the investor section of our webcast, where the replay details will be posted later today. For now, I say goodbye and thank you very much for your continued interest in PAION.
Thank you for joining today's conference call. You may now replace your handsets.